out of the room if you are going. So, are you ready?
Yes, I think I'm ready now.
Okay, perfect. So, our next presentation is from Stefan, and he will speak about federated identities.
Yes, so thank you all for being here. I was already introduced, so without further introduction, I will just go to the first slide. I brought the initial scenario with me. So this is Alice and Bob, and probably you all know them by heart. And Alice is sending Bob her public key just to establish a secure communication or a trustworthy communication. So the question to you is, what's wrong? Can you tell me what's wrong with Alice sending her public key over to Bob? Is that secure? No, of course not. Yes. There is no name attached to the public key. There is no signature. Barely, there are lots of things missing. Do you see additional properties that could go wrong? So what's wrong with the model of Alice and Bob in general? Like, who sees one topic, one additional topic? Hands up. Or maybe two? Okay, so I brought four with you. So the first one are basically privacy risks. And probably most of you are not aware of it, but before you do establish a TLS connection, maybe to your banking system, there are also DNS queries running and so on. And all these queries and the communication patterns that are established across the internet, they do paint a picture of you in the internet. The second thing that is wrong with the model of Alice and Bob is that it doesn't deal with group communication. We do lots of stuff to basically re-implement then group communication on top of a couple of TLS connections. So that is simply missing. We do have malware risks, so if you have your, like for example, your email address published somewhere in the internet with your PGP key, of course somebody can send you a malware. A VPN doesn't protect you from receiving malware through the VPN. It's not the right protection layer. And we have, of course, denial of service attacks. If I have your email address and I can send you lots of encrypted emails, and you will drown in emails, and you don't know what's in, you all have to delete them. That's also not good. I will go through the four risks that I see here, and I will tell you what we are doing in the NeuroPill cybersecurity mesh to prevent basically these four things. So a recap, what is a digital identity, and what is a digital identity in the cybersecurity mesh? Basically, it's a data structure that is similar to a job token, so it is coming from the job token. We use nowadays more binary serialization, so we use the CBOR web token format, CWT, and otherwise the fields are basically the same. We have expiration dates and so on. One special note has to be done. We have a so-called realm field. That means a user can say he would like to belong to a realm. And the issuer audience ID, they are not strings, but they are fixed size 32-byte fields. And I will explain you in a second why this is the case. I will hop over this slide. Here's the reason why we use the issuer and the audience are fixed size, so they are 256-bit hash values. So you can take any text, and there's a one-to-one mapping if you use a cryptographic hash function to the hash value of it. So here there are two examples. The hash value of some stupid text is one ID that you can put in as the realm, for example. The second one is, this is Alice, and the hash value of it. That is unique across the whole system. You can also create such a 256-bit hash value from the signature of this token. So basically, you take the hash value of the signature that also gives you an NP ID, and that is also something that you can put into the realm field. And last but not least, we have an NP subject. And that is also a kind of an MPID, with a notable difference that you can combine several MPIDs. You basically just XOR them together. So here I've depicted as an example, you use the ID1, the hash value of some stupid text, plus the ID2. So hi, this is Alice. That gives you, again, a unique subject that is unique in our system. Or you could use it in conjunction with the fingerprint of the signature. So that is also then unique. Of course, you need to verify the signature that is involved. So we have a public key in our digital identities, and that allows you to verify it. If you have set the issuer field, then there's one difference. All tokens in our system are self-signed. And if there is an issuer field, then we are pushing the additional signature of the issuer to the attribute set. So there are two signatures that you have to verify then. And each fingerprint, so each digital identity in our system has a unique fingerprint. And there's only one person who can generate this kind of fingerprint on the world. Okay, so back to the four topics. How do we deal with privacy? The first 2 points, they are more of a hassle to you. So if your privacy is impacted, of course, identity theft is possible. You could receive phishing emails which are tailored to your specific profile. And especially you would have to look for the metadata of communication. So your IP address is something that belongs to you. So it's like a personal data that belongs to you, but you can't hide it even with a TLS connection. That is the baseline of the internet, how it has been built today. So what can we do to basically remove this kind of privacy risk? We will just use random digital identities. So we just, with our digital identity, we just create a second one, and we use this one to first establish a TLS connection to a different system, right? That basically doesn't tell anybody who's really connecting, and then in the second step, we allow the connectivity and the transport of the digital identity of Alice and Bob. And the point is, Alice can use more than one random digital identity. So she can use 3, 4, how many she would like to, and Bob can do the same. And that means there will be multiple authentication paths. So it's not like a multi-factor authentication, but there are multiple ways how you can contact Alice because of the different random identities. If we do this, then each actor is also at least authenticated once. Because with the random digital identities, you have several ways how to do it. We can basically say, we can introduce now Marvin and Eliza, and they do the same. So Eve in the middle here is a bit lost because she doesn't know anymore which of the connections between all the different random digital identities she should attack. And she actually doesn't know which of these connections is really carrying data. In our cybersecurity mesh, we let these random digital identities establish connectivity. So we take away from you the control to establish this kind of connectivity. We solely base it on latency and on hash distance, and we let the random digital identities connect by themselves. And by this, we unfortunately, we add something that we already had. That is, we take away also a feature, and that is confidentiality. Because if you don't know if your next hop is one of you or that of Eliza, then, and you don't trust Eliza, that's a problem. So we have to do something to add back confidentiality into the system of random digital identities. We can change these random digital identities frequently, so you can basically stop one instance, you can take a new one, and so on, just to basically obfuscate Eve and make it difficult for her to attack the system. And under the hood, I introduced you the second topic, group communication. So that was a second problem that we had. So privacy, we can say with random digital identities, that's possible. We can protect ourselves at least better than before. So now we have also introduced Eliza and Marvin. And the question is, how can you basically integrate them that they can also can communicate with Eliza and Bob? And group communication has several other challenges, like key distribution, also membership revocation or membership addition. And our solution is we will use an additional digital identity, which we call the intent token. So you know that our random digital identities, they have fingerprints. They are all the same. We can, our subject is also a hash value. That's also 256 bits. So we can use the random digital identities as a routing layer. And we can basically publish intent token. And because they all use the same subject, they will find themselves in across all the random digital identities. Again, a bit of knowledge shaping. What is an intent token? I think the official term is a disposable yet official identity. So consider yourself, you're driving a motorway, and there are lots of different toll collect stations. And at each station, you have to pay a fee that you can pass and you can go on the motorway to, on the way to your vacation. For each of the different toll collect stations, you would like to use a random disposable identity so that your path cannot be tracked. Yeah? So that is something that is official because you can pay with it, but it's disposable and it goes away once you have used it. So an intent token is exactly that. So we basically derive it from the digital identity automatically. We do it for a dedicated data channel, and we can limit the access. We can limit the access in terms of time. So you can have an intent token for just half an hour. You can have it once. You can repeatedly refresh the intent token if you would like to, but still they will always be different. They always have a different fingerprint. The only thing that they have in common is the subject. And we could, and of course you can add additional attributes to the token just to do additional access control. There's one thing more that you can do with these intent token. We can define different classifications. So you're used to TLS and there's a TLS connection to a system, but in the security, cybersecurity mesh, you can now have different classification of transport layers. So we have defined a virtual token exchange, a virtual data channel, a public, a protected, and a private one. So the virtual one will just exchange the token, and nothing more will happen. There's no callback, nothing can happen more. The public one is intended to be used like interfaces or APIs. The protected one basically is the same as MTLS connection, so you know who you're going to talk to, so you can directly put it to the audience field. You know this will be the fingerprint of the other person, you know this will be your protected data channel. And the private one basically means you combine the subject with different, so you XOR together several kind of IDs and identities to create a private data channel. So the difference is in the classic internet, you have IP addresses, and it's very system-centric. And in Europeal, with the public data channels, everything is interface-centric. And you basically, with a private data channel, you put back in the system. So first you have an interface by combining it with the fingerprint of a specific service, then you may have a system access. So that's like a turnaround of the architecture and what you can do with a cybersecurity mesh. We have used this approach in the Fluidos project. Maybe some of you have heard of it. It's fluidos.eu. It's part of the European Cloud Initiative. And we use exactly this kind of difference. So we use virtual data channels to discover all the clusters that are available. And then we use private ones to exchange details about the clusters. So the private data channels are end-to-end encrypted, and the virtual ones are just the public information, I have a cluster I would like to communicate with you, but nothing else is going to happen on. No? Okay, so back to group communication. Now we have a mean, we have a common denominator, we can exchange all these message intent tokens, and that allows us to basically define different kind of sessions. So Eliza gets all the token from Bob, Marvin, and Alice, and she can set up different sessions. So she could authorize maybe just Bob and Marvin and send a message. And likewise, Eliza could deny that Bob can send her message. So it's always based on authorizations of each person for sending and receiving. So basically, we have now put back in confidentiality with the end-to-end encryption, which is based on these intent tokens, these disposable yet official identities. So group communication solved, privacy solved. And I see the sign, 10 minutes left, so I hope I won't take that long for malware risks. But the good news is, it's solved. We have the message intent token. And with this message intent token, we can basically restrict the access for specific data types. We can say we have an intent token for pictures. We can have an intent token for JPEGs. And you can pack in all the validations or the security modules behind it that you would like to have. At least, of course, if you accept everything, we can't change it. But at least you have the grip to say, no, I don't want to receive everything. All right? So it's getting very hard for an attacker just to send you something without your knowledge. So at least the attacker will become visible, because if he would like to send you malware, then he has to first get your authorization via the intent token. So malware, let's say, solved. Denial of service, what do we do with this one? It's also solved. Because if you don't have an authorization of the other peer, you can send as many messages as you would like to. We just throw them away. You won't know if the other person has authorized your token. It's useless. And that basically means in the cybersecurity mesh, we don't have spam anymore. So if you don't give the authorization to a sender, the messages will never appear. Again, an attacker would become visible if he would like to send you a message, yeah? Because he has to subscribe to the same data channel, he has to issue the intent token, and that means you know who is sending you messages. Okay, so how much time is left? 8 minutes, including questions or including questions? Okay. I have a couple of examples how you could use the cybersecurity mesh or how you could use the digital identities. I will skip over the first two because then we have a bit more time for questions. And I will directly go to the third one, because we started off with the topic of federated identity. So how could you use the cybersecurity mesh if you would like to host an identity provider? So how would you do it? First of all, you would issue yourself a digital certificate, and you would use it as a CA, a certificate authority. That's like a classic PKI setting, but you keep it private, this CA. So that is yours. It never leaves the system, it stays. But you can use the fingerprint of this digital identity to put it into the issuer field of additional digital identities. And within your identity provider, you can then set up additional realms. And for each realm, you have the issuer. For each realm, you have a fingerprint. So you don't have, that's unique, that's a name, the hash value of a name. So now we don't need this strange abbreviations in the URLs anymore, but we can just directly put the hash value in it. And then you offer basically a data channel for others to register to your realm, so for your clients. That also means that your clients, you don't need to set up any credentials anymore for your clients. because they have a digital identity. They claim to be in the CMU realm. You can just say, yes, this client belongs to my realm or not, and we are done. Similarly, you can also say the users can register within your identity provider. So you get you set up a different data channel to register your users. And again, we don't need to store any passwords of the users anymore because they have a digital identity. So our identity provider basically is a solution to manage group membership. And the identity provider doesn't need to store any passwords anymore. And that also reduces your risk of operating this identity provider because you don't have to do all the measures for the user database and for the password database. So in conclusion, so the cybersecurity mesh, as it is also shown here on the right side, it is in itself a federated identity setup. We have all the different kinds of digital identities which are talking to each other, and we use these different kinds of sub-identities, the intent token, to establish data channels. Basically, it's a bit like each participant is hosting its own micro-PKI for its own purposes, and then we let these PKIs talk to each other. And our main topic for the next years probably will also be an efficient group management, how we can do this across the, with these data channels. And basically the main point here is efficiency, how we can do it. Our project has received funding. I would like to mention this. So we are part of the NGI Zero and the Next Generation Internet. We have received two fundings from NGI Assure and NGI Zero. We have also received the funding from the Fluidos project, and probably we are going to start an open collective campaign this this year, but we yet have to set up all the details, so maybe if you're interested, get back to me. These are our repositories, so if you like what we are doing, then give us a star or maybe fork it. And that was my talk. Thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions.
So any questions? So thank you very much.